Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, November 11th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont, and today is Veterans Day in the United States. So I don't think you really wish a happy Veterans Day to people, but if you know people who have served, like my dad, who went to Vietnam, then you should take a moment and you should thank them for their service, whatever shape it may take. And that's a very good thing to do. So, in fact, Apple's been doing a lot of that. We are going to talk about it with my two lovely panelists. I have Charlotte Henry with me today. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. Yes, it's we don't call it Veterans Day here in the UK. It's Armistice Day, the 11th of the 11th. And the Sunday before is Remembrance Sunday.
I remembered it. Yes. Okay. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, what a happy Monday.
Sure, we'll go with that. It's probably happier if you have the day off. Some people do. And there's no mail and no banks, I think, today here. So, that aside, Andrew, I actually want to start with you because we are talking a little bit about an app that Apple decided to spotlight on Veterans Day called Helium, and that's H-E-A-L-I-U-M, right?
Yeah, they shared a bit of the story behind Helium. It is an augmented reality app, and it's meant to help veterans manage their anxiety. And it uses this, what they call a blend of storytelling, neuroscience, and game design. Now, the app was created by this former television journalist. Her name is Sarah Hill. And after about 20 years in her career of constantly reporting on, you know, violence and tragedies in the world, she start to have some panic attacks, possibly PTSD. I don't know. Maybe it was worse than that. So she went to a doctor about it who put her on something called neurofeedback. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know a whole lot about that, but it does involve seeing your brain scans on a screen and, like, responding to that and trying to maybe intentionally make your brain get the brain waves for, you know, happiness or calmness, mm-hmm. for example. Yeah. So she did that treatment after a while because it was something that she could do at home. And then she was inspired to work with this doctor to create this app.
Mm-hmm.
So now, it's a very cool story.
It's really cool. So what neurofeedback is, or sometimes it's called neurobiofeedback, I have to start this by saying I am not a neuroscientist. I'm not a scientist of any sort. So I know a tiny bit about biofeedback because it's a thing that I have used. And biofeedback is when you sort of think about what you're doing. A little bit of meditation works that way, where, like, sort of, you know, people say sit down and, like, take a deep breath and close your eyes and try and concentrate on just breathing. Particularly if you're, like, super stressed out, and that can help you sometimes refocus. That's a little bit of biofeedback. And what neurofeedback is when you're using like a display of brain waves and trying to look at those, you know, trying to think a little bit differently so that those brain waves are doing something a little different. But you're looking at what your brain activity looks like as you're doing the exercise. So it's biofeedback in itself. There's a lot of different ways to do that. And I've used some of it for migraines and for different stuff, which is sometimes helpful. Sometimes not, but sometimes so. And so neurofeedback sometimes is a good way to feed into that, which is super cool. And seeing that this story started out as, you know, she was having panic attacks and then decided to start helping other people with this, and then it turned into something for people with PTSD, was really interesting to see. You know, as I was reading through the story, it was interesting to see that evolve, like how many other people could be served by using something mm-hmm. like this. And it's a pretty, like, I looked at the screenshots of the app, I looked through it a little bit, and it looks like a pretty nifty app. It looks like something that, like, I don't have PTSD, but for the neurofeedback and sort of the focus, for people who think maybe meditation or something isn't for them, this might be a really cool idea.
Yeah, it seems, well, what struck me is not so much the app itself, although, because, like, you are no expert in this field, although it does seem a very good idea and a very powerful thing for someone to dedicate their time to doing. It also strikes me that Apple is doing an awful lot of work in this field. We've seen Apple doing stuff on veterans' records. Now, I'm slightly removed from this because obviously, given that we're a much smaller country, the number of army veterans and that kind of thing that we have here is significantly smaller. Obviously, the strain on people is the same, but, you know, it's obviously a significantly smaller number of people we're talking about here. Sure. In the UK. But it's clear Apple is taking this issue, you know, somewhat seriously. They've kind of, I don't know if they've seen it as a corporate social responsibility thing. I don't know if Tim Cook and other senior executives have kind of links to military families. I don't quite know what has inspired it, but there seems to have been a number of things in recent times where Apple has worked with your Veterans Affairs Office, mm-hmm. in the US, is doing things, like I said, on veterans' health records, and it does seem to be kind of digging into this issue. And you mentioned to me before, actually, when we were just kind of chewing around this issue a bit, that it's obviously a way for Apple to start looking in a kind of quite a big chunk of people, but not, you know, not the whole population, mm-hmm. a way of looking at look at people's health records and those kind of things. It's a good way to start.
Yeah, you know, rolling out on a significant scale. There's a whole lot of people who use the VA for various things, whether it's I'm going to, you know, it's the VA here, so whether I'm somebody who's using the VA for medical treatment, or there are other resources available to people besides just, you know, doctors and things, making all of that stuff happen. And then for people to be able to carry that information with them wherever they go, because particularly if you are if you move, or you're somebody like my dad who spends part of the time in a different place, then because my dad goes to Arizona in the wintertime, and you know, being able to have all of that information on your phone would be a very handy way to be able to make sure that if you are seeking treatment, that stuff's up to speed. And it's also a really good way for Apple to roll out health records for everybody. Like, if you want to just be able to have all that information on your phone, that might be a really good way to do it. So I think it's interesting. Andrew, did you check out the app at all?
I didn't. I just looked it up on the App Store, but I will check it out a bit more.
Kind of peek through it. That was what I did. Like, I looked at it and, wow, that seems kind of nice. I think that, like, that might be a good thing for everybody to do. Just spend a few minutes sort of with a little bit of biofeedback. I will also point out that today the main story on the top of the App Store is about this app called Team RWB, which stands for Red, White, and Blue. And this is a way for folks to get together. This guy put together a group of people that was training for a marathon. They were all veterans, and he started trying to find other opportunities for them to get together and sort of organize around different things. And so he built this app so that wherever you are, you can go find meetups. Like, if you're a veteran, you could reach out to some members of that community. And one of the things about this one in particular is that they also have what they call civilian supporters, which is just people who did not serve but want to support actual service members, you know, people who did serve and things like that. And the thing about it that he said was, because part of what he wants to do is help integrate those folks back into society when they're done with their tours. He said, like, if you're going to integrate a veteran, they can't just hang out with other veterans. And so they're trying to put things together so that there's more community for those folks when they come home. And that's, like I said, that's the top app story on the App Store today, and it looks pretty nifty, actually. So if that's a thing that's interesting to you, you should go check it out. So, you know, we talked a little bit about Apple doing a number of things to work with veterans and that kind of stuff. Another thing that Apple's been up to lately has been retail. We've seen some retail news recently, and one of the interesting things that's come out of retail this year is Angela Arendt left earlier this year and was replaced with And here's where it gets a little sticky. So the person who is currently the head of retail is Deirdre O'Brien, who was head of people and is now the head of retail and people. And she recently sat down with InStyle. And Charlotte, that was an interview that you sat down and dug into a little bit.
Yeah, it was actually a really interesting interview. And I kind of always thought that Deirdre O'Brien was a little bit boring, right? Maybe, like, in part, that's because we didn't really know much about her.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, I just thought, this is a 30-year Apple vet who's done, three decades in the same company. She's a bit of a corporate machine. Fine, safe pair of hands, whatever.
Right.
But there's a little bit more to her. And I've been a bit unfair. She's quite punchy in this interview. And it's I pulled out some of the big quotes in my piece. You might want to read the whole thing as well. It's worth it. And one of the insights she gave before we kind of talk about what comes next is actually she talked about the kind of bleak days of Apple when everyone, in the early 2000s or whatever, the end of the dot-com boom, when everyone thought it was all going to go wrong. And she said, honestly, at Apple, most people had written us off. They really didn't feel like we were going to make it through, but there's always hope. So she said she learned a deep sense of optimism from that, which is kind of interesting. She speaks about her relationship with Steve Jobs as well. Which was nice.
Interesting,
I think what you were hinting at before is we all kind of assume that Deirdre O'Brien was kind of keeping the seat warm for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And as every month goes by, it feels a lot less like that. Now, I think Ange Arons officially left in February. Was it about this time, kind of November 2018, December 2018, that we learned she was going? There was a bit of time where she was going, but still officially there, even though Deirdre O'Brien had the title.
I want to say that she announced in February and then was leaving in May, April or May.
Okay. My point is we're getting to quite a chunk of time where there's been nobody new.
We sort of thought that Deirdre O'Brien would be the person sort of keeping the bench warm until Apple found somebody to be the dedicated head of retail, and then she would sort of hand that back off to that person.
Right. We assumed she was the retail. We assumed she was the HR person, which is a specialist role, particularly in a company the size of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty big deal, that job. And then we assumed that someone with retail experience and expertise, which Ms. O'Brien, for all her experience and skills, does not have or did not have before this, she would get something else. Someone else would come in and do that job. Maybe Deirdre O'Brien would get promoted in another way, but she was not going to keep running the Apple store, basically.
Right.
But with every week and every month that goes on, that's starting to feel a lot less likely. And to me, it's starting to make sense why they might keep it all with one person and a trusted pair of hands. You have to remember how many people... I referred to this in the story where last week, where Apple was talking about its expanded parental flexibility program.
Right.
It's kind of, and they applied that to everyone who works in Apple stores as well, in their retail employees. It's about half the people that work for Apple work in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a lot of people for a minute. Think about that.
It's a huge number of people. And so if you're managing the infrastructure of the stores, it kind of makes sense. You're managing a lot of the people there as well.
Mm-hmm.
It does make a bit of sense to me that you would have this title, Vice President, Retail and People. There's a lot of overlap. So it's starting to make sense to me that she's kind of taken on this role. Now, what we may see is at some point she's a Vice President at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously in that senior team. We may see that title get bumped up at some point. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm curious this still doesn't feel done, I guess.
No, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? It sort of seems like there's
So when
like something's going to happen, whether she gets a new official title or whether we do get a new person. Maybe there's somebody else who becomes head of people and Deirdre O'Brien becomes head of retail full time. Like, we don't know how much of her day is spent on each of those things.
No.
You know, percentage wise. We don't know what the bulk is of what she's doing, but we know she has to be doing a significant amount. We got the Fifth Avenue reopening. We've had a few other stores open under her as the head of retail. So there's been quite a bit that she's been in the lead for, if nothing else. You know, I know those things were underway before April or whatever when she took over, but those are still things that she would have had to have some sort of hand in, like, even if it was just at a very high level. So,
interestingly, from what I can see, they both have the same rank. She already got bumped up when Angela Arendt left, because once Angela Arendt announced her departure, Deirdre O'Brien immediately got bumped up to senior vice president, which is the same kind of ranking that Angela Arendt had.
Right.
I just think there's a lot that's interesting about her. She obviously She's kind of got this, you know, the InStyle magazine describes her as bringing a human touch to Apple, which I thought was quite a nice way of doing it. And you know, there's been a lot of criticism of Apple stores, hasn't there, in recent times. Angela Arendt is obviously, did remarkable things for Burberry. She saved that company. But there was a lot of things people were very critical of that she did at Apple. People don't particularly like some of the things she did with the Apple stores. And a lot of people say their Apple store experience has not improved during her tenure running them.
Right.
So Apple has brought in someone that really understands the company. Deirdre O'Brien ran the first e-commerce sites and things that Apple did.
Mm-hmm.
She gets it. This is someone that also has a, you know, kind of similar story to Tim Cook. Came out in her 20s, says she kind of wanted to give her whole self to Apple, you know, be open and honest about who she was. Like, there's a lot of synchronicity in that top team now, and you kind of get the feeling that Tim Cook is kind of, you know, Johnny Ive has left or is leaving, Angela Arendt has gone. It's kind of a very Tim Cook team now, and I wonder if Deirdre O'Brien is going to be shifted in the way we think anymore.
Yeah. I'm very curious what retail, what final form, I guess, retail management is going to take. We kind of know what retail looks like now. I'm wondering, which way it's going to go. And if there's going to be a new head of retail, if they hire someone new at the SVP level, if that person's going to be head of people or head of retail, and they're just going to let Deirdre O'Brien continue as the head of retail, or if she's going to go back to people. What do you think, Andrew? Let me just put you on the spot here.
Forgot I was muted. It seems to me that if something changed, I kind of think maybe she would just be focused on retail. I don't know how well she did at people, but now that she's both, we've been hearing a lot about the retail side of it. So, because I think that's where most of worker experience is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it would be interesting to see if she kept those two positions or if it got split.
Yeah, I would be curious if there's a new hire to help take up some of that, then which one Deirdre O'Brien would keep.
So here's my question. Prediction.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction is she keeps that SVP title.
Yes.
And maybe there's someone underneath her that looks, you know, or even two people underneath her that are dealing specifically with those two things, but she's in overall control of both.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We know from that Tim Cook is quite a... He cares about that trust in the relationship. He's not... those fundamental relationships are quite important to him.
Yes.
You know, Deirdre O'Brien's been there 30 years. He obviously has quite a deep relationship with her.
Yes.
I think, this is a critical time for the Apple stores, for looking after Apple stuff. I can really see. The company, I think, is changing a lot more than we think, actually. I think I've written pieces about it before, where we're really starting to see Tim Cook step come into his own. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, having a 30-year Apple veteran leading one of this important area is a big part of that.
Yeah, I think I'm interested to see how this works. I like your idea of somebody who reports to Deirdre O'Brien being the person sort of running retail maybe day to day. And maybe that gets split off into, you know, she ends up with a lieutenant that reports this stuff to her. I think it's sort of interesting, like, if you were to make a pie chart of all the stuff that Apple does, right? Like, they make hardware, they make software, they have stores, they have cloud services, they have all this stuff, right? The Apple store, the Apple retail experience, you know, started out as a tiny sliver. For people who don't really remember the time before the Apple store, Apple was mocked openly, publicly, loudly, repeatedly for trying to establish a retail presence. Cause this was right after I think it was Gateway PC stores, were out in the world and failed spectacularly because it turned out nobody wanted a PC. And I think, you know, that's certainly changed over time, and like more and more and more people are going to Apple stores, more and more people work for Apple stores. They're trying to make them a destination where people will just go and hang out, even if they're not buying anything. So, you know, like that big, beautiful flash cube, you know, the glass cube store on Fifth Avenue, in New York City, like all of those things are continuing. And I think it's taking up a lot more of Apple than maybe we realize. And I think, like you were saying, Charlotte, there's been a lot of evolution at Apple that maybe we aren't really seeing. Like some of, you know, we're seeing some, but what we're seeing publicly may just be the tip of the iceberg as far as internal is concerned.
Yeah, and it is evolution, not revolution, because it's Tim Cook.
Right.
But it is evolution. That's, I think, becoming indisputable now. And look, there doesn't go past, certainly not 6 weeks, where we're not seeing something about Apple retail, a new shop, a new something.
Mm-hmm.
This is new, a big
or remodeled, or a new today at Apple class, or streaming a thing.
Exactly. You know, Andrew and I look at these things day in, day out, and we're seeing loads of announcements about what they're doing to new stores. And they're building, even in cities where they have one store, they're remodeling and reopening or building new stores.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of press releases about a second store or another store in different places, or we see a lot of opening a new one and reopening an existing one, you know, that just got updated or, you know, has changed in some way. So I think there's a lot more to Apple retail, especially like how it's viewed internally. I think it's entirely possible that when it started, it was just sort of seen as a necessary evil. Like, nobody's selling Apple stuff right now, so we're gonna have to do it ourselves. And that's not the case anymore. So,
oh, that's interesting. I always thought it was a control freak thing. No one's going to make our Apple stuff in stores look as nice as we do, so we're going to sell it.
That's true. And you don't remember CompUSA, where we used to call it the Apple ghetto. So it's entirely possible that, yes, Apple just wanted control of the retail experience, too. I don't think they necessarily wanted to be in retail. Like, I don't think that was ever an exciting thing that Apple was super jazzed about. I think they just felt like they had to. And, you know, which is where the necessary evil comes from. But at least if we're going to do it, it's going to look as good as it can. So we're going to get the guy that did the Gap stores to do ours. And, you know, and now here we are, you know, bajillions of dollars and all those iPhones later. And you know, people line up outside of Apple stores for everything. So I think there's a lot more to Apple retail than what we're seeing. And I hope that whatever that shape is, it becomes more public, because I'm really curious how it's going to turn out.
Here's a funny thing before we go.
Yes.
The big flagship Apple store in London, mm-hmm, is on Regent Street. On the corner of Regent Street and Oxford Street, right next to it, is a Windows shop, Microsoft shop. There's basically an exact copy of an Apple store that came like years later and kind of just looks the same. And it's just little and just not that many people in there.
We have that here sometimes too. Because there's a Microsoft store like the opposite end of the block from the Apple store in downtown Portland. And I have been downtown and heard somebody say, like, point out the Microsoft store, and the other, and like more than one time I've heard someone else go, oh, are they still, like, is that a thing? Or are they still, are those stores still open? Like, surprised that there's a Microsoft store. So it's interesting how that perception has changed, not just in my lifetime, but like since years started with two. Like, even in that amount of time, it's been a pretty interesting shift for a couple of massive companies. So, interesting. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. I'm going to leave everyone to go thank veterans for their service today. And I want to thank both of you for being here and your service on this podcast. Charlotte Henry, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.
Andrew, as always, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you have any, if any listeners have any strong opinions about Apple Retail, about Deirdre O'Brien, if you want to talk to us about things that you are doing to help out veterans, if you are a veteran and you would just like to say you're welcome for my service, you can talk to us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And you can leave comments in the show notes. And I want to thank both of you for being here today. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, happy Veterans Day and be excellent to each other.